Good evening, everyone. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us the whole entire day. It's a sort of difficult time to get together to learn, and everything that we can do in order to join together in learning Torah is inspiring, and I hope we can all take inspiration from it. As many of my colleagues mentioned, this Learnathon is being sponsored by Nathan Kirsch in the memory of his brother Jerry, and so I'd like to thank him for that sponsorship. So the title of our shiur, to end off the night, is How Coffee Changed Shavuot Together. And in that vein, I'd like to say to all of you, L'chaim. I actually was coffee, and it is 9:30 at night, but I'll still find a way to fall asleep. Alex just shared the screen. I'm going to try to use that, I'm not going to be so consistent in referring to it. I'd like to be more of a discussion. But we know that it's become so commonplace, at least in most years. And, you know, Manishtana Chag HaShavuot Hazeh from all other Chag HaShavuot. But in most years, it's so commonplace for almost every shul to have some sort of Tikkun Leil Shavuot program. Right? Some sort of program offering shiurim and learning opportunities throughout the first night of Shavuot. There's usually some nice refreshments which accompany the learning. Right? Tarchiner mentioned before that your main goal should be the learning and not the refreshments. So hopefully that's the case, but some good refreshments are also appreciated. And it's very commonplace. And people who you would often aren't as engaged in Torah learning, some of them will still come to shul on the night of Shavuot to learn. And what's interesting is that the source for this custom of specifically learning all night on Shavuot is actually quite late. You won't find any allusion to learning specifically on Shavuot in the Torah. You won't even find any allusion to learning all night on Shavuot in the Talmud. You will not even find an allusion to learning all night on Shavuot in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law. It actually comes about much later. So what I'd like to do with the half hour given to us right now is, number one, to discuss the history of Tikkun Leil Shavuot, which is the history of spending the night of Shavuot, the first night of Shavuot, in Torah learning, engaged in the learning of Torah, to see where it comes from and what the nature of that custom originally was and how it developed. And then I'd like to ask, why did it take off in the way that it did? Now, I'm going to take a stab at trying to get some participation here, because I don't like listening to myself talk for too long. And if I were to ask you, why does it make sense that on all holidays, of all the holidays, we learn all night on Shavuot? Why would that be? Why spend Shavuot learning Torah all night? Ah, thanks, Alex. I appreciate that. Thanks for having my back there. So, Shavuot is the night that we receive the Torah. And you would think, of course, that's the perfect night to spend all night learning. However, I have a problem with that answer, and that problem actually is the Gemara sounds like it says the exact opposite. And now, Alex, if you could please share the source sheet with the audience. If you look at source number one, this is the Gemara in Pesachim, Samaches Amid Beis. Amar of Elazar, Akol Modim Be'atzeret Be'inonami Lachem. Everyone agrees that on Shavuot, you also require time for yourself. What this means is that while there is an argument in the Talmud as to how one should spend the holiday, and one opinion says that you should learn, you can either learn all day, or you can enjoy yourself, whereas the other opinion is that you can split your day between time for Torah learning and time for eating. On Shavuot, everyone agrees that you must spend time eating and that you should not spend all day learning. So the fact that Shavuot is, in the eyes of Chazal, Zeman Matan Torah Tenu, is actually not a sufficient explanation for why we would specifically learn all night on Shavuot. If so, where does it come from? And the answer to this is, and Alex, you could scroll down, is that it is Kabbalistic in its origin. The idea of staying up all night on Shavuot is a Kabbalistic idea, a heavily Kabbalistic idea. And if you look at source number two, what you see is the backdrop of staying up all night on Shavuot is not that it's Man Matan Toratenu only, but it rather is a continuation of the time period of Pesach, Svirat HaOmer, culminating in the holiday of Shavuot. And yes, I will use this as a plug to please remind everyone that after, for those who have not done so, after we're finished, to please count Svirat HaOmer. If you take a look in the Zohar, quoted in source 2, the Zohar is commenting on the period of Svirat HaOmer. And it talks about how, after the Jews left Egypt, after the Exodus, they were in a state of impurity. And that the 7 weeks of the Omer is a 7 week period for purification, for ridding ourselves of that tumah, of that impurity. And that you have to count every night of the Sefirat HaOmer to accomplish that purity. And here we'll read a bit inside. Source number 2 says as follows. We'll read from the English. Come and see, any person who doesn't complete this counting, these 7 complete weeks, to be purified in this way, is not killed pure and is not pure, nor is he worthy of having a share in Torah. But one who arrives pure to this day, and the count was not lost from him, when he reaches this night, he must learn and be connected to Torah to guard this purity that comes upon him that night, purifying him. And yes, you hear the word purity, purity, purity. The backdrop, the idea of learning all night on Shavuot in the eyes of the Zohar is not an academic enterprise. Usually when we learn Torah, the goal is to acquire knowledge, to know more about God's will, to learn how to be a better person and to observe mitzvot better. Not so in terms of Tikkun Leil Shavuot. It is a way of guarding and maintaining tahara. And this will become important as we go on. And he said, and the Zohar continues, and we have learned that the Torah that we need to learn on this night is the oral Torah, so that they may be purified together from the wellspring of the deep stream. I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what the wellspring of deep stream is, but apparently there's a unique tahara, purity, associated with the oral Torah, the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Afterward, on this day of Shavuot, written Torah will come and join her, and they will be as one couple above. So Zohar says here, you should learn Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral Torah, in order to join them together, to make a union between the oral and written Torah. Then is proclaimed about him, and this is for me, my covenant, with them said the Lord, my spirit that is upon you and my words I have put in your mouth. And here comes the source for the custom. Thus the earlier pious ones, the Chassidim, did not sleep on this night, and they studied Torah, saying, let us acquire a holy inheritance for us and our children in two worlds. And on this night, Knesset Yisrael is crowned above them and comes to intimately join with the king, and both of them are crowned above the heads of those who are worthy of this. Knesset Yisrael are crowned with oral and written Torah on Tikkun Leil Shavuot. It is the culmination of a purification process. And if you do this the right way, then you can achieve that purity. So we see then that this idea of Tikkun Leil Shavuot is not simply a Torah learning enterprise. It is a Kabbalistic enterprise, one that is meant to connect to the purity and unlock the purity inherent within the day. And the question is going to be, how does that translate into every shul being packed with people who have no connection to Kabbalah? How does that happen? And so we continue. If you could please continue to scroll down with Alex. So the next source is quite an amazing story. I did not bring the whole story for you on the source sheet. I will not discuss it in detail. But we have a quotation from Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz, for those who are listening and are familiar with Lecha Dodi, the song that we sing, or we commonly sing, on the night of Shabbat, Friday night, that the author of that is Rav Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz. He was a Mekubal, a Kabbalist, who was a disciple of Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and they together lived in Tzfat. And Tzfat, during the 16th century, was a center of Kabbalah, a center of mystical Jewish learning, and it really began the spread of, with the Arizal, with Rav Yitzchak Luria, the spread of Kabbalah really began with those people in the community of Tzfat in that time. And he records a remarkable story that happened to him. And this seems like the first recorded Tikkun Leil Shavuot, the first time that there was any official program of learning all night on Shavuot. And we read in source number 7. You should know that together, the pious one, referring to Yosef Karo, and I, a servant, and your servants from the friends, we agree that we would rid sleep from our eyes on the night of Shavuot. And thank God it worked. We didn't even stop learning for a moment. And he goes and he explains what they learned on that first night of Shavuot. It involves certain selections, as the Zohar quoted from Torah Shebichtav. It involves the Kriyat HaTorah, the Torah reading for Shavuot. It involves other areas of Torah from Devarim. It involves the Haftarah, certain selections from the prophets, certain selections from writings, the Mishnah, which incorporates the oral Torah, and further to the Zohar, mystical learning. And then, here's where it gets a bit spooky. The Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz describes how in the middle of this learning, when they got to the Mishnah, Rav Yosef Karo was possessed. He was possessed by some heavenly voice. If you take a look here, where it says, when we began learning the Mishnah. When we began learning the Mishnah, we learned two tractates. Our Creator gave us the merit, and we heard the voice of the speaker from the mouth of the pious one. A great voice with the pronunciation of letters. All of the neighbors heard and didn't understand. It was very enjoyable. And the voice got increasingly stronger, and we fell on our faces. No man had the spirit to lift his eyes and face because of that great awe. That voice began speaking to us and said, listen, my beloved, the great beautifiers, my beloved, peace unto you. You are praiseworthy and your bearers are praiseworthy in this world and the next world. That you exerted your souls to crown me on this day. That for so many years the crown of my head had fallen and none should comfort me. And I, the Mishnah that rebukes men, have come to speak to you. Yes, that's right. I, the Mishnah. In Rav Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz's retelling of the story, the Mishnah was talking to them. A personification of the six books of Mishnah was talking to them. Clearly a very spiritual, mystical experience. Right? I don't know if any of us have had the Mishnah talk to us recently. This was the first Tikkun Leil Shavuot. And as we read in Tzfat, this ended up growing from Rav Yosef Karo and a few of his select disciples to a communal minhag. If you look at source number 4 of Avram Jalanti, who was a Kabbalist who lived in Tzfat during that time period, writes about how on the eve of Shavuot, they would sleep for a few hours during the day so that they would be able to have the strength to stay up all night and learn on Tikkun Leil Shavuot, just as Rav Yosef Karo had done. That was Tikkun Leil Shavuot in Tzfat. So, how then do we arrive at what we have today? So, what we see in the halachic literature is that this custom slowly and slowly spreads. And not only does it spread from being a custom adopted by the biggest Kabbalists of the generation, it also changes in its nature. So first we have the Shalach HaKadosh in source number 5, And again, taking into account time and place. So we're still in the 6th century here. This begins in Sfat with the Sephardic community, people from Africa and other areas in the Ottoman Empire who had emigrated to Sfat. And now, a little bit later, about 50 years later, we have the Shlach HaKadosh, Rabbi Yeshaya HaLevi Horowitz. And now he is one of the first, I would say, normative halachic sources to quote it, although he still definitely sees it as a Kabbalistic type of enterprise. Says Rabbi Yeshaya HaLevi Horowitz, "Balayla hu shel chag Shavuot, on that night, the holiday of Shavuot, yedura shena mikol mi sherotzel dabek b'kdusha." Anyone who desires to cleave to holiness, right? That's the goal. The big b'kdusha, to be holy, should rid sleep from their eyes. Biasok batarah kol halayla, and should engage in Torah study all night. V'seder halimod shel zeh halayla, and the order of learning for this night, far neparsein v'nodzah l'rabim ma'adei kontrasin shenitpashtu. Everybody knows. The people who learn know that there are the manuscripts that have gone out describing what you should learn. Rabbi Yeshaya HaLevi Horowitz is describing texts which were apparently became publicized, which dictated a specific curriculum of learning that you would do on Shavuot night. Clearly, this came from Tzvah and spread outward. And look what he says: "Haminag hazeh nitpashet b'chol eretz Yisrael v'chol ha'malchut." This custom has spread throughout the land of Israel and the kingdom. And as we'll see, the kingdom here is referred to the Ottoman Empire. Rabbi Eliyahu Horowitz, I believe, I hope I got his name right, we'll see in a second, who really wrote about provided a lot of inspiration for this year, assumes that it is the Ottoman Empire, which makes sense. It starts from Sfat and stays in the Ottoman Empire. Not in all of Europe yet, but in the Ottoman Empire. Einaki kulam kecham galem v'aktanim. There is no exception from young to old. Everyone does this. V'chein kiblu v'kimu aleihem v'azareihem. Right, a quote from the Megillah. This is what's been done. They accepted it upon themselves and on their generation. So now we have a record of this happening in the Ottoman Empire. It's not just the pious, not just the greatest Kabbalists in the community. It's everyone. And we continue and we go to source 6 in the Magen Avraham. And here is where it becomes much more commonplace. Rabbi Yeshaya HaLevi Horowitz, although he includes many halachot, is still a heavily Kabbalistic book. The Magen Avraham of Avram Gobiner is a commentary on the code of Jewish law. He is not a Kabbalistic sefer. He is interested in promulgating halacha. And from my knowledge, we're now a bit later in the 17th century and we're in Poland. And he is the first, I would say, typical halachic source which discusses this custom. And he says as follows. It says in the Zohar that the first pious ones would be awake all night learning Torah. And most lomdim, most learned people already had the custom to do this. By the time you get to the Magen Avraham, this is spread to the learned in Poland. And now we give an explanation. A simple explanation for why this is because the Fisha Yisrael Hayushen Kalalila. Maybe some in the crowd have heard this explanation. The Jewish people were asleep all night on the night they got the Torah. And the Holy One, blessed be He, needed to awaken them. Kitabin Medrash, it says in the Medrash, now the Magen Avraham comes and says, it's not just a Kabbalistic custom. This is not simply this esoteric idea of engaging in this purity exercise. And as I should have mentioned before, the Mikubalim of Shlomo HaLevi Alkibitz or Shai HaLevi Horowitz write about you have to learn a specific portion from every area of Torah. Because what we're doing on that night is we're uniting Knesset Yisrael, the bride, which is the nation of Israel, with the Chatan, with God. And that unity is created through the Torah. And every aspect, every area of Torah is considered tachshitin, jewelry. Every area of Torah is a way to adorn the bride, to make this union. That is how this starts off. And for the Magen Avraham, it is much different. It is a sort of atonement because, as many of us know, The Medrash says that when we got the Torah, we were sleeping. We weren't excited enough to get the Torah. To atone for that lack of excitement, we stay up all night learning on the night of Shavuot. And it goes further. If you look at the next source, it's from Rabbi Yaakov Reisher, the Chok Yaakov, and I think this is the second typical halachic source to quote this. And Rabbi Yaakov Reisher changes, number one, now it's, just to note what he mentioned, it's not just about learning, it's also about not sleeping. The later authorities wrote not to sleep on this night, but only to engage in Torah study, and his reward will be great. So notice the emphasis on specifically not sleeping, which is very interesting. It's not just about the learning, it's also about not sleeping. And he continues, this custom has spread in the eyes of the multitude to learn together in groups of 10 based on the tikkun and to say Kaddish and to immerse at dawn. So he quotes this idea of learning the tikkun, learning the specific types of Torah that you need to learn to do this tikkun. And he says, but that's not what we do. In my father-in-law's house, they wouldn't learn in groups of 10. Rather, everyone learned alone, because the main tikkun was only instituted for those who are ignorant and don't know how to learn. Therefore, they say the tikkun. And you read this and you're like, really? Rav Yosef Karo and the Mekubalim had this tikkun because they didn't know how to learn. It's quite insulting to the Sephardic community, if I do say so myself, to be honest, and I hope there aren't any Sephardim in the earth there are. I hope you're not insulted. But Rabbi Yaakov Reisher says, to learn a tikkun, a specific point, that's not the point. Just learn. Just learn Torah. Learn what you want. You don't need a minyan. You don't need, it's not a religious ceremony. The reason you would have needed 10 people is because 10 people brings about the hashra'at hashchinah, the divine indwelling of the divine presence. So it's a rock of Reisher, you don't need that. You just need to learn. Just learn whatever you want. If you can't learn, okay. So they came up with a ceremony. They came up with a list of things to learn for those who can't. But if you can learn, learn. So as we've seen, this goes from a Kabbalistic enterprise practiced by a select group of disciples of Yosef Karo, spreads throughout the Ottoman Empire, gets to Europe and Prague, and Poland, and becomes not just learning Kabbalah and joining, making this union between God and Knesset Yisrael, but also just a night of Torah learning, a night of learning Torah. And the question is how this happened. And believe it or not, and this gets back to the title of our shiur, the answer might actually have to do with coffee. The answer might actually be that for the first part of this custom, it wasn't practical to expect the general public to stay up all night learning. Because, as many of us are noticing right now, as the hour continues, it becomes a lot harder to concentrate. It becomes a lot harder to learn. And only the greatest can really brave every night. Or, first of all, he notes, Eliot Horowitz, as in source number 8, who was one of the first to really point out this commonality between the spread of coffee and the commonality of staying up all night in Judaism, without any sort of caffeine, it's very difficult to keep awake. But what happens is, as coffee spreads, coffee started in the Ottoman Empire, starts in Egypt and other parts of Africa. As it becomes more available, the night becomes not just a time of sleeping, but a time where people can go out and socialize in a profane way, and also becomes a time that people can use for sanctity. Take a look at source number 8. It was not only in Italy that the growing popularity of coffee in the 18th century exerted an appreciable impact upon Jewish ritual and confraternal life. Even farther to the north in Worms, the statutes of the Gemilla Chassidim Society reveal a striking change in the status of the beverage during that century, as well as clear evidence of its use in nocturnal rituals. In 1731, the confraternity decided that at its annual banquet, no beverage other than wine or brandy would be served at its expense. Tea or coffee, it added, would be considered taboo. Right? Coffee, when it's invented, is this sort of secular foreign substance. We don't need that. Why are we drinking it? it was discouraged. However, by 1763, however, the taboo was broken and coffee joined wine and brandy among the official drinks the confraternity served at its banquets. In that same year, moreover, Gemilo Chassidim of Worms decided to provide coffee on two other occasions. The study vigils held on the nights of Shavuot and Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Right? The community is providing coffee so that you can stay up all night and learn on Shavuot and on Hoshana Rabbah. So, as coffee, which begins in Egypt and in Africa and the Ottoman Empire, spreads throughout Europe, Elliot Horowitz, in this article, and I can provide you with the link, it's quite an interesting read, it's a bit complex and long, but it's quite an interesting read. As Elliot Horowitz points out, the idea of staying up all night becomes much more commonplace. People start doing tikkun chatzot, the notion of waking up in the middle of the night and mourning the temple, and people start staying up all night on Shavuot. Just to point out a few halachic issues with coffee. As coffee becomes prominent, so the halachic world needs to respond. To note a few of the examples, in source number 9, which is the Radvaz, Rav David ibn Zimra, it's probably the first record of coffee being discussed in halacha, he wonders, what about the issue of bishul akum? We have a problem of not consuming items which were cooked by non-Jews. What about coffee? Is coffee considered bishul akum? And yes, he is lenient in the end of the day. If you look at source number 10, I actually found this one very funny, and this is something that I actually relate to. There's a prohibition to eat before prayers, eat before shacharit, to eat anything before davening. But what about coffee before davening? And you can imagine, just like nowadays, and I will say for myself, you know, as all of us coffee drinkers know, your day doesn't start until you have your cup of coffee. Coffee before davening can be very useful. But there's also a prohibition to eat before davening. And Chizkiah da Silva in the Pri Chadash deals with the issue of, can you drink before davening? And he responds, that which the author wrote, you can drink water, that is specifically referring to without sugar. But with sugar, there is no greater arrogance. There's a part of the issue of eating before davening is arrogance. It's considered arrogant to put your own needs before your service to God. So is the law that coffee is permissible to drink before prayer in order to concentrate and pray, especially in Egypt, where the mind is unsettled without coffee. Of course you can drink coffee. You can't concentrate without coffee, says the Pri Chadash. So of course you can drink coffee before davening. But with sugar is forbidden. Ask your local Orthodox rabbi as to what you're allowed to do with milk, without milk. Okay, there are different customs, but coffee becomes part of the ritual of the Jewish morning. If you look at source number 11, this is from Moshe Zakuto, another very interesting response about, what about on Shabbat? We don't usually eat before Kiddush. We don't eat before we recite Kiddush, but what about, can you drink coffee before Shabbat? He says, is it permissible to drink water or coffee before Shabbat? The answer is, of course you can. We could bring a brew to this custom that everyone in Turkey has the custom to drink coffee after midnight because it's a type of healing, meaning to keep away sleep as it is known. Right? It says for Moshe Zakuto, it's a type of medicine. It's medicinal and therefore not included in the prohibition of eating. It's not normal food. It helps you concentrate. And what Elliot Horowitz argues is that as coffee becomes more commonplace, the night becomes more accessible, and once the night becomes more accessible, it's made available to the general public. And you can imagine, once we're talking about the general public, this Kabbalistic ritual of joining the bride and groom of Knesset Yisrael and Hashem, and all the different parts of Torah you need to learn in order to adorn the bride, it's less applicable to people who never picked up a Zohar or will pick up a Zohar in their lives, so it becomes a general night of Torah learning. And so coffee actually plays a great role in promulgating the idea of staying up all night on Shavuot, and it really did change Shavuot forever. And the question is, what is the significance of all of this? Now, let me make it clear. I am not saying that we can blame or we can attribute this custom of staying up all night just to coffee. It's not so hard to understand why this would happen. As Alex mentioned at the beginning, it is a night of Torah learning, and it makes sense to then spend that night learning Torah. Where I think you see is something very interesting. Number one, you see how Jewish rituals and customs develop. Even if they start with a certain orientation, as time goes by and they're popularized, they can change to make them more accessible. And now Shavuot night became a beautiful thing for the entire Jewish community, not just those elite who are engaged in Kabbalah. You see how that happens. There are many examples of Kabbalistic customs which become much more common spread. To name one, the custom of Kabbalat Shabbat. The whole ritual that we say on the Friday evening starts again with the Kabbalist in Sfat, but as time goes on, becomes much more common spread. But number two, I think you actually see something very beautiful. And that is the ability of a community to take a very commonplace development in society and to transmit that into holiness. Coffee comes to the Jewish community. That doesn't need to be a religious idea. It didn't need to be a religious innovation in any way. But the Jewish community, always thirsty for more opportunities for growth and connection to Torah, takes coffee and says, now we're going to make Shavuot the night of Torah learning for the entire public. And it's not just Kabbalah, it's for learning whatever you want. It's for showing our enthusiasm toward Torah. And coffee is not the main impetus. The impetus was there. It's because we love Torah. But coffee makes that possible. And so as we conclude our night of Torah learning, what I think we see is that the ability we have to take every scenario in life and to translate that into spirituality. And even in this particular circumstance, where this Shavuot will be different, and I don't know how many people will actually stay up without the presence of the shul and all the refreshments. It's for sure lishma, although you could always have coffee. And that's encouraged. There's precedent for that. But we can take every situation we're in life and use that to get closer to God, connect ourselves to Torah. May it be that we use this Shavuot and every night of our lives to connect in a deeper way to the Torah. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you again to Nathan Kirsch for sponsoring. And everybody have a wonderful Shavuot and a Chag Sameach. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Sameach.
Thank you. Thanks, Sameach.